Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. A salute to the cerebral. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome to the Jeff Blair Show. Mike Wilner alongside me. We are live from the winter meetings. National Harbor, Maryland. Blue Jays, of course, making a little bit of news yesterday, signing Steve Pearce to a two-year, $12.5 million contract. All eyes from a Toronto point of view. Once again, today we'll be on Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista. I would think that in a general sense, the eyes of the baseball world right now are kind of focused on the Washington Nationals, who made, we believe, a rather determined move on Monday night to acquire Chris Sale from the Chicago White Sox in return for Lucas Giolito and Victor Robles. That deal was not consummated, and depending on who you talk to, it either came close, didn't come close, or was just kind of died in the vine. But it seems pretty obvious that the Washington Nationals are going to be very aggressive this week and the rest of the offseason. As I said, we're joined by Mike Wilner, and without further ado, we're also joined by Ned Colletti, Dodgers senior advisor to the president and CEO, former sports writer, former
many
PR
years
director,
ago.
Former general manager.
Yeah, I used to cover the National Hockey League.
Yes, absolutely.
What a cool gig that was. That was way back when.
Man.
Oh, yeah, covered the Fighting Flyers.
See, that's what I used to like about you, is you were the one PR guy that you could commiserate with on deadline.
Yeah.
You understood in the press box where you'd hear somebody go, damn it, you knew what was going on. You knew exactly what was going on. Ned also now working for TuneIn Radio. So, let's start with the Dodgers business yesterday, re-signing Rich Hill. A nice contract for both sides. I mean, what did you guys see from him last season that made you comfortable in committing to him long-term?
Well, he really pitched well. You can't always take away a player's health, obviously. Had blisters, which kept him out of a lot of games, limited his starts, did not limit his effectiveness, though. He pitched really great. This guy had a perfect game going against Florida. He pitched well. I think he was a great counter to Kershaw as a number two, both left-handed, but different types of stuff. Kershaw pitches with this hard slider and this good velocity and a lot of different things. And Rich Hill's more a guy who pitches off his breaking ball. So two different looks, but somebody that is ultra-competitive. And so when you look at his career, you know he's a guy that perseveres because of where he's been, how he's done it. And I could see it also in his games that he was somebody that was not going to get rattled early in a game and fall apart. And so you got a two-inning start. Get to the sixth inning, needed another inning. He knew how to fight his way through it. Was his whole career. So you look at the starting market, and if you're not going to make a trade with the Chicago White Sox or somebody and unload your farm system plus, Rich Hill is the man.
When Blue Jays fans think back and when they hear blister, they think back to Al Leiter in the 80s, right?
Yes.
And how it was a good 3 years of him soaking his hand in pickle juice every other day. And you know, it's a scary, scary thing because you never know when these problems are going to crop up again. How much does that factor into your thinking when you're giving him 3 years?
Well, I didn't do the deal. I was not part of the negotiation or really a lot of the thought process. But I think you have to know the severity of something. And that type of injury can crop up all the time. It's almost something that is habitual to a lot of players, right? And so I think you got to keep that in mind. I don't know if they signed him expecting to get 100 starts out of him over 3 years or if they thought that they have enough depth that, hey, if he's got to miss a month because he's got it and so he's six starts shy of a full year, we can live with that. We've got enough young pitchers. We'll cobble together if we have to because you never know who's going to get hurt one pitch to the next anyway. I think it was really a move to add somebody that they knew, that they liked, that they saw be productive, and they'll have to figure out a way to manage any injuries that he has. The blister's not the only injury Rich Hill's ever had. It's the most prominent one in the last few months.
You know, we're seeing the Blue Jays approach this offseason. It appears to be something like the 2013 Red Sox, where they're kind of, I mean, they're trying to reallocate resources, I guess is the right way to put it, and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to find their Shane Victorino and maybe their Koji Uehara and maybe their David Ross and their Mike Napoli. You know, Ned, conventional wisdom seems to be that teams are becoming more and more reluctant to invest long-term deals. Players in their mid-30s. I'm just wondering, is this some carryover from the steroid era, or is it just strictly analytics-driven? And what does it mean long-term for those players? Because you put together a lot of successful teams, and the Giants have continued to put together a lot of successful teams by investing in veteran players and signing those guys and getting the best out of them. I mean, what's the key to doing that right, you know, to building around veterans as opposed to just building around prospects?
I think it's all on chance. There's all different levels of chance that people are willing to take. And a chance for us, and I know Brian Sabin in San Francisco very well and how he does his thought process. I think the chance of the older veteran is knowledge and how much you know about that player. And do you know enough to know his health history? Do you know enough to know his discipline, his off-the-field lifestyle? Does he take care of himself? If you're going to give him this big contract, does he take a breath and never come back to the hunger that got him to that meeting? Because sometimes the hunger that gets him to the meeting, you never see after the paper's signed, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of it. I think teams are wary. Just a general observance that teams are wary when a player gets into his low 30s, early 30s, 32, 33. And there's a desire to have a contract that takes him as close to 40 as he is to 30, or sometimes closer to 40 than he is to 30. And we all know in this era, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 38 was playing like 28. Chances are 38's not going to play like 28 again. Mm-hmm. And so 38 is really 38. So how much do you want to invest in it, and what are the dynamics? It's a very tough dynamic. On the gravestone of every general manager, you will have a list of free agent signings that didn't go well. And most of those are at the end of that contract. And so it's a real mix and match, but you got to know who you're talking about. You've got to know who the players are, and you've got to know how they think, how they prepare, and how important winning is and meeting expectation.
As a player gets older, I'll let you in a minute, but no, as a player gets older, Ned, does it become, and I'll try to figure out how, does the choice of agent become more important? And the reason I'm asking you that is I look at a guy like Dan Lozano, who represents Carlos Beltran and also represents Josh Donaldson. You know, Carlos Beltran, what, has signed $70 million worth of contract after the age of 35. A couple of good two-year deals. He's got a one-year deal now. You know, without sort of getting into specifics about each agent, does it become important now that the player have the right agent? You know, is there almost like different horses for different courses, I guess?
That's a great question. There may be a little bit of that. I think anybody in the business, in the agent business, in the GM executive business, I think there's so much intellect and so much history that can be reviewed. I think you could look at those contracts and figure out how he was able to do it. I don't know if he's overly persuasive. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's knowledgeable to be able to really put his player in the bright light. And I think it's really the player too. Who's the player? Because he could be the greatest agent at getting players in advanced stages of a career and making more money for them. But he's got the players, too, that do that. Could he do that with a player that had 2 years of decline and now is 36 years old? Probably couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an interesting question. I never thought of that as who, if there is a certain agent for a certain type of player in a certain stage of a career.
I'm glad I let you ask that. That was a very good question.
Thank
Jeffrey.
You.
Well done.
I've done this before.
Yeah. I haven't heard that question before. I hear 1,000 questions. I've never heard that one before. That's a good one.
This is a question you might have heard before, but I'm going to ask you it anyway, Ned. As someone who's been in the GM's chair, and as we mentioned, he's done a lot of roles, there seems to be this idea, at least from our end, where when a long-term contract is signed, you know, back a question to the long-term deal, very often a general manager can think to himself, well, you know what, if this doesn't work out, I'm not going to be around anyway in year 6 or 7 or 8 of this deal. Is that actually a thought process that some GMs go through when they're doing this?
They may. They may. My thought process was I always took it one, I really did take it in a very short cycle. I always try to do what was best for the team. I think another way of looking at that is if you've got good young prospects, which I had in L.A. and Seager and Peterson and Urias and De Leon, and I wouldn't trade them, even though may had that have extended my career as a GM at the Dodgers. Had I traded these guys off and got older players, and we won, no matter what, we did win. We're just going to win in the month of October, to the depth of October. But I think that conversation maybe in some guys, you know, I hear it from time to time, but it's not like, I mean, I hear a lot of things from time to time, and I don't know if it's fact or fiction or just something to say, a throwaway line. I think most GMs have what's best for the organization in mind. And don't forget, you've always got an owner. I don't know one GM that doesn't go to the owner and have them give you the final say. And most of the owners are so successful at the businesses that brought them in the game, they know thought process. And they can call thought process and they can figure out, okay, how much have you really thought about this? Because they're going to have their answers too, because now suddenly they are in, they may run a billion-dollar company, $10 billion company. Now they're running a smaller company, but one that's had so much more popularity and exposure than the one that made them the money that let them buy the team. So I think the thought process of ownership will always keep that lane in the right spot. People will say it sometimes, probably as a throwaway line. Hey, if it don't work out, what do I care? I won't be here anyway. Well, I don't think anybody would ever really feel that way. I think it might be one of those lines people say sometimes to direct attention away from how they're really feeling.
Before you move
go ahead,
on,
go ahead. Yep.
But since we're at the winter meetings and stuff is happening and news is breaking, there is a report coming out from John Norris of Baseball America right now, and Tom Hadrecourt has kind of confirmed it, that the Red Sox and Brewers are about to announce a trade, that they've come together on a trade, and the word is that it is a reliever going from Milwaukee to Boston. That's all we know right now.
Well, the relief market, Ned, has changed a bit since you were general manager.
Yes.
We'll wait and see how that trade turns out. But, I mean, we saw Mark Melanson's deal. God, last year we saw lefty specialists getting 3 and 4 year deals.
Yes.
This is an area the Blue Jays are focused on this year, trying to address relievers. What explains that? You know, because we used to, I mean, I used to have the idea that you could bring 100 guys into spring training, and as long as one of them threw hard, you could put a bullpen together. Now it's a 3 year contract for Tony Sipp.
You're not far off. If you look back at the history of closers, most of them were failed starters. Most of them were pitchers that had 2 really good pitches, sometimes just 1 with the feel for a second, but had courage. Mm-hmm. The courage to pitch late in the game when the lights are the hottest and you got to get those final outs. But there's a lot of guys that I've been around that were not signed out of college or Latin America and said, he's our closer of the future. It happens once in a while. You know, going back in my career, Robbie Nen was not a closer out of school, and then a closer before he got to Miami, and then to San Fran. Eric Gagne, who you guys know very well, he was a starter. I saw him pitch in L.A. He was a starter. He could give you 2 to 3 really quality innings, and then the fourth inning started to wobble. He had a tough time getting through 5. Figured out how to pitch 1. You know, so many times closer. Kenley Jansen. Mm-hmm. Kenley Jansen was a catcher. We had a month to figure out if we were going to put him on the 40-man. He was a catcher that was going to hit 150 in the big leagues, but a great arm. We put him on the mound. We put him on the 40-man with 12, 13 innings on his resume. And he's developed into one of the guys we're talking about today. Chapman, when he first came up, starter. Mm-hmm. You know, so these are things that happen, and so you are right. I don't think it's as easy to throw 100 guys in a room and one of them's going to come out as your all-time closer. But most teams know who they've got in their system, and if they're in the upper level of the system, and if they can get a strike, if they've got a strikeout pitch, if it's a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, a cutting slider, tremendous cutter, change, whatever, and they've got command, but they've got the courage to do it, you may have the guy right there. Trouble is, if you're a contender and you don't know that for sure, and you're going to have a pseudo tryout come spring training in the month of April, and if you pick the wrong one, then you're saying what you said. Hey, let's go trade six prospects and get a closer because I ain't going to be here anyway.
But it's not even closers anymore. I mean, now we're talking about, you know, Mark Zepchinski's getting 2 years, Tony Sims getting 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry Blevins wants three.
Jerry Blevins wants $7 million, apparently. It's getting crazy.
Yes, it's that is going through its cycle. We see these cycles every two or three years. You see a different group that you're going, how could this happen? And I've been doing this forever. And I can remember in the early 80s, people going, this is going to stop. This is not going to continue. This is going to stop. When I started, Billy Buckner was with the Cubs. My first job was with the Cubs. He was making $400,000 a year, Billy Buckner. We signed Fergie Jenkins, Canadian. Chatham, Ontario, I think. Had 270-some wins when we signed him. Going to the Hall of Fame. Signed him, I think, for $187,500. It's going to stop. Yeah, it stopped.
Yeah.
Now that's like meal money.
Yeah, and Kirby Puckett signed that $3 million deal in 88, 89.
Absolutely.
That was the ceiling back then. And
yes.
People were saying, well, this is it, right? This is never going to get worse than this.
And now bullpens are so important. And you look at this World Series and how the bullpens were like the highlight of the World Series is what everybody talked about. Miller throwing more than one inning. Jansen, when he was Aristotle qualified, throwing more than one inning. Chapman being forced to throw more than one inning. So now you've got this more and more of a spotlight on how are you going to pitch the last few innings of the game. So these pitchers, these relievers that are relievers, and some of them, if you line up your staff, you got your starter, you got your closer, you got your setup guy, and then you've got everybody else. Everybody else now is looking for 5, 6, 7 times three.
Conversation with Dodgers senior advisor Ned Colletti. Ned, in a general sense, taking away your title with the organization, with the Dodgers, in a general sense, Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. Edwin turned down, we know, 4 years and $20 million from the Blue Jays. Do you think somebody will give him a 4-year contract in this market?
I think this is such a guess. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And his agent's been doing this a long time. I think the agent has got to have enough confidence maybe in his relationship with the Toronto Blue Jays to know that may not go away for a while, or he may know somebody else out there that he knows really well is going to be able to do that later. I think it's I got to believe that's how he feels,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise it's a real tough spot. And you got to be creative, too. You don't know there's so many different dynamics to it. I was telling a group the other day, when we signed Greinke in L.A., we're in the 140 range for 6 years. Casey Close was his agent. He told me, he says, look, there's another team right with you. Okay? Turned out to be Texas, I think. I don't know. I don't know to this day. But I think it was Texas from what you would hear in different things after the deal was done. And we had to figure out a way to get Greinke. So I knew that Zach, I had met with Zach for a long period of time. I knew that comfort, just being comfortable in an environment was important to him. So I also knew that the taxes in Texas, if that's where it was, are different than the taxes in the state of California.
Right.
So when you're talking about $145 million, you're talking about a decent amount of money that is state tax versus no tax. How are we going to make that up? Well, we made it up by giving him an out after 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of calmed him to, hey, if I don't like it there, I can leave in three. If I'm really good, I can go get another deal before I'm 35 years old.
That's what the Jays did with A.J. Burnett.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fan of opt-outs. I know a lot of teams aren't, but in some ways, I think, Ned, an opt-out can overcome whatever advantage there is, a disadvantage of taxes, or in the case of Canada, being in another country. I'm a big fan of opt-outs. I know a lot of people aren't.
So I like the idea of having options.
Yeah.
As a guy that had to make decisions on what your roster looked like, on what players you wanted on that particular team that particular year, I was cool with it. But my point going back to Edwin is, if we keep hearing this number, 80-4, we've been hearing this for a long time now, right? And nobody seems to be willing to step out and go deeper than that. You know, the hope if I'm Edwin and I'm Paul Kinzer, right, who represents him, you know, that he knows he's got that. And that may not go away. Now, is there another creative way of doing it? Is it 27 times 3? Is there a different, you know, what's the concern? Well, the fourth year is a concern. I mean, I don't have any idea what the talks are. But wherever it gets to be a concerning thing, how do you alleviate that concern? Unless somebody else is going to come out of nowhere and go, hey, we'll do 5 times 20, whatever, you know.
Ever have a player come back to you after you thought the door was closed? Your own guy, a free agent?
Not when I closed it.
Okay.
It took me a lot to close it. I would say, look, I'm going elsewhere. I never said, never call me again. Mm-hmm. I would say, don't call me again unless you have another idea. And I'm going elsewhere. And I left off saying, but it was somewhat implied, I'm going elsewhere. But if you don't see me, now in parentheses, mm-hmm. if you don't see me sign somebody else and you have a different idea, call me. Okay?
Yeah.
But I'm not waiting for you. I'm not saying, hey, let's check in with Jeff Blair every morning to see if he's changed his mind. That's going nowhere, and that just shows you're chasing. But I told almost every guy, I said, you know what? This ain't going to work. You're here. I'm here. I see no common ground. I'm looking elsewhere. I've been looking elsewhere. I'm going to pursue elsewhere. Okay? You get a different change of opinion, different. Your mind changes. You learn more. Come back. I've always told agents, so I said, look, you know what you know. I know what I know. And if your player and you represent your player and you're going to take your player to the best place he wants to be for the most money, okay, where he wants to be for the most money, and that's your goal, and this is a place he wants to be, and we really want him, because I'll go out on a limb and say we really want him, then it's incumbent upon you and me to figure out how. Because the worst thing that can happen is I settle for letter B, and you settle for level B. So you know if you want to be here. Your guy knows if he wants to be here. If we can figure this out, it's incumbent. And that would typically tell me how serious they were. Because the following sentence typically wasn't, well, if you don't do this, we're out. It was, we'll stay in touch.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be, because everybody wants to do what makes everybody the most happy. That deal has happened, by the way. It's the third closer that the Brewers have traded since August. Tyler Thornburg has been traded to Boston. Several reports, Ken Rosenthal and Evan Drellick are right on top of it. Thornburg took over for Jeremy Jeffress, who took over for Will Smith, and had a whip under 1, 38 hits in 67 innings last year. So he goes to the Red Sox. Travis Shaw and a couple of young pitchers, including Josh Pennington, apparently are going back to the Brewers. So there's your reliever market. I want to ask you, Ned, while we've still got you, about the whole Dodgers intelligentsia, for lack of a better word. You know, when Alex Anthopoulos went over there, joined a bunch of former GMs, and I think the idea that a lot of people have, including me, is that a bunch of you just sit around there and think. You're just trying to figure out stuff. It's a big, huge, genius think tank in L.A. Is that what it is?
College of Coaches, College of GMs.
Yeah. Oh, the College of Coaches. I'm familiar with that.
I know you are.
That didn't work out very well.
Exactly.
Not well at all. But hopefully, well, this seems to be working out a little bit better. But is that what it is? Is it just a bunch of people sharing ideas and trying to figure stuff out?
No, I think everybody's got their own responsibilities. You know, Alex has got things that he concentrates on. Josh Burns got things he concentrates on. I think they have their levels, their areas of stronger expertise than other areas. And so they stay in those areas, but there is communication back and forth on the major issues. I don't think you'll ever have enough people in a room, as long as you can make sure your egos are what they are and they're in a respectful spot, that have been through different things. The most educated people do not typically have experience right away. You need experience, you need history, you need things that have already occurred to kind of lead you to a certain place, especially if it's a specific player. So I think with the number of people that are available, that everybody's got their own role, everybody concentrates on what they think they can do best and what the leaders think they can do best, and then they're available to chime in when it comes time to making a decision. And not every decision is run by everybody. But everybody, once you've been around, and everybody's been around there for a couple of years now, Alex a little bit less, but everybody else has been there for a while. You have a feel for people's strengths and really how they think. I think that the the culling of the thought process, the challenging of a thought process, is what makes decisions the best. Even if it's two people. When I was in San Francisco, it was really saving to myself a little bit of Dick Tidrow. Mm-hmm. This went on for 11 years, and we won a lot of games. That's how I ended up in L.A. The Dodgers noticed that, hey, the Giants had half the payroll and were winning most of the time they played them. How did that happen, you know? But the way it worked is Sabian and I would talk probably 360 days a year, and we would challenge each other. We ended up like two brothers where we would fight about a player, and we would walk endlessly. After a loss at night, we'd walk 3 hours into that city. Everything would be closed up. We'd be walking up, like we play the Expos in the late 90s. We'd be walking around, you know, Rue Bishop and Crescent till for no reason.
Just walking. Stop in every now.
Well, we'd stop in first, but
yeah,
then
of course,
everything then would lock up and we'd walk.
That's true.
In New York, and we'd walk. I mean, we walked to many days where the sun was coming up by the time we walked back.
Yeah.
And it was just to call your thought process. And, okay, do you think we should sign this player? I think we should. Well, I think we shouldn't. And then 3 hours later, you know what? I understand your point. I think you're right. Well, you know what? I've been thinking about your point. I think you're – and you go back and you keep doing this and you keep sifting. And you come up with a lot of decent ideas that ended up – that team, we played, I think, 15 games in a 7 or 8 year stretch out of the race. 15. Mm-hmm. There's some teams that will play 15 games this next season out of the race. Played 15 over a 6, 7, 8 year period of time. That's pretty remarkable.
That's amazing.
The Giants are.
My last point on that, though, is if you can have that, and whether you have two people doing it or you have six, that's the way you do it, in my opinion.
Ned, I appreciate you doing this. Always good to talk to you.
You're welcome, guys. Pleasure for me, too.
Ned Coletti, senior advisor of the Dodgers. You can hear him on TuneIn Radio as well. Thanks, Ned. We'll be back with your phone calls. It's the Jeff Blair Show with Jeff Blair and Mike Wilner, live from National Harbor, Maryland, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the lovely Gaylord. It's called the Gaylord National Convention Center or something like that. National Harbor, Maryland. Site of baseball's winter meetings. Jeff Blair alongside Michael Wilner. We're going to go to the phone lines. 416-870-0590, star 590. 1-888-666-0590. Interesting conversation with Ned Coletti. Mike, Ned Coletti has been a president, a general manager, PR director for a variety of organizations. Interesting conversation about when a door is closed or isn't closed, because I think we just assume now that with Steve Pearce signed that the door is closed for Edwin Encarnacion. It's probably open if he wants to crawl back and hands and knees to the Blue Jays and take a 2-year contract or a 3-year contract. But I like what Ned said. You almost think that his agent, I mean, unless his agent's a total moron, which he probably isn't, his agent must feel he has something in his back pocket in order to let it go this long.
I really hope so, because, I mean, I can see Edwin being pretty frustrated and pretty stressed out by what's going on. I really hope his agent does feel like,
yes,
like he's got something in his back pocket. You would think it would be done by now if he did, but... maybe not. I got to say, just about Ned, it was the first time I'd met Ned Coletti. Very impressive. And more impressive than the time he spent with us is the fact that it's been, 12 minutes since he got up from his chair, and he hasn't been able to make it 10 feet away.
No.
He just keeps getting stopped every 3 seconds by people. So a really popular guy around here.
Yeah, and a guy who, believe me, a guy who, as a general manager, knew how to work a lobby just about better than anybody and enjoyed working the lobby, too. And believe me, that's an art form. Robin Woodbridge, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, with Jeff Blair and Michael Wilner. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. I honestly believe that the Jays are looking in the wrong places. I looking at the last year's team, we understood that the pitching is the main goal here that we need to focus on. And the Jays, if you look at the Jays roster right now, you have a Gold Glove with center fielder. You have an AL MVP at third base. You have one of the best defensive shortstops. You have a great second baseman, great catcher, and the starting pitching is, if they're the same and healthy, they're one of the best starting pitching rotations. I truly believe in order for the Jays to win a championship, they have to make a big splash in the bullpen, and it has to be Chapman. Last year, the narrative was they didn't have pitchers that couldn't pitch in one-run games. With the lack of offense this year, those one-run games will be more important than ever before. Hence why our starting pitcher can get us through five innings, but we don't have the bridge between six, seven, and eight.
Would you give Aroldis Chapman 6 years?
$84 million, yes, I would.
Would you give him 6 years? Never mind the money. Would you give him 6 years?
I will give him 6 years, 84.
Wow.
This is not one reliever you find. This is, like, out of 100 people. This is one reliever you find out of 1,000 pitchers. He is one
Wilner.
Of a kind. 103 miles an hour in the AL East is hard to hit.
The Yankees had him last year, and look how far they got for the first.
Yeah, but that's because they weren't winning. That's because they weren't winning to get to that point. Look at when he comes into the game.
Look at what the Blue Jays bullpen did in the playoffs last year. You know,
they didn't give up a run against
the Cleveland Indians, and they never had the lead.
Okay, Mike, when Marcus Stroman has to go in through the lineup three times, we see his record. And it's because Gibbons is afraid to go to his bullpen that he has to throw Stroman out. The reason why I continuously call this program and show is because I want every Jays fan to hear what the president is saying. We want to sustain competitiveness. No, every single year the Jays should be, we want to win a championship. In this market, we are able to compete with the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox. Every single year it should be, we need to fill that one hole to win a championship. Not sustain competitiveness, we should win championships. That should be the goal. Not just because the crowd is coming, the revenue is up. That's great from the owner's perspective.
Okay, let Mike answer. Thanks, Rob. You had your say. Thanks.
The way to win a championship is to have a team that's competitive year in and year out. And I think the Blue Jays' goal, very obviously, when they say sustained competitiveness, they don't mean we want to try to sneak into the playoffs every year. They mean we want to have a team that's good enough to win a championship every year. Chapman, first of all, from a personal note, I don't want him anywhere around the Blue Jays. I don't want that guy in Toronto. I want him, you know, in my city as little as possible. So that's one thing. But the idea, I mean, just the thesis statement from Rob is that they're looking in the wrong direction. They need relief because with the lack of offense, one-run game, the low-scoring games will happen more often. Well, yeah. Then they should be looking for offense, right? Because then
well,
yeah,
I think what Rob's point, I think the question is, realistically, what can you address? Like, that's what we're talking about with the Blue Jays. They need offense. They need corner outfielders. They need a backup catcher. I think they need bullpen help. We know that. They're not going to get all that.
Nope.
It's not going to get done. So you prioritize.
But this idea of having, having an Andrew Miller, having that shutdown reliever, it's a wonderful thing to have. You cannot use a guy the way Terry Francona used Andrew Miller in the playoffs. You cannot do that.
You can if you have. No, you can't use him that way. But I think what people are saying is, and what I think, and this is why I'd love to see them, Frank. I'd love to see them get Kenley Jansen more than anybody out in the market. I want to have Jansen and Osuna at the back, and then I can figure out how I'm going to use them. I trust John Gibbons how to figure out how to use them. And, you know, as good as the bullpen was in the playoffs last year, they were not good at the start of the year.
No, they weren't.
They cost the Blue Jays home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Mike, they did. They were horrible. How many losses did they get in the bullpen in the first 2 months of the season? I mean, six out of Brett Cecil alone.
Yeah, probably 11.
Yeah.
But also the fact was the offense was horrible the first quarter of the season where they went into all these bullpen losses came because it was 2-2 in the seventh in every game or, you know, and the bullpen comes in with no margin and they couldn't throw five shutout innings until the team finally scored a run.
I think what people feel, Mike, is if you're going to have difficulty addressing the offense, then look at building the team the other way. But that point is moot because, as much as I would love to do that, I'm not a fan of giving a reliever 6 years. Like, even I have my limits with relievers, especially when I know that Osuna's going to be my closer all the way through that time. I don't want to give a guy who's essentially, who may not be my closer, who may be my semi-closer, 6 years. It's pointless. That's a bad allocation of resources.
If you give a reliever 6 years, then you know at least two of them are going to be either hurt or terrible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
At least two.
Dimitri in Hamilton, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, good.
Excellent. So, let's be very clear on this. I mean, there's difference between making great trades and making very good trades. Alex made trades that wowed you. Shapiro's and Atkins have made trades that we say, oh, very good. I mean, this N1 situation would have never happened with Alex.
Oh, that's, I'm, you know what? Well, wait, I got to call bull on that. Wait, no, I will. Okay, I'll let you finish, Dimitri, but I call bull on that it wouldn't happen with Alex.
But do you believe that Edwin was an Alex guy?
No, Edwin was a J.P. Ricciardi guy.
Okay, no, but do you believe
sorry.
Alex, no, do you believe Alex liked Edwin's game?
Sure, but so does Shapiro and Atkins.
Okay, but do you not think, I mean, with the different management styles, that when Alex made a trade, it was like earth-shattering, breaking, like we have great players on our team. Right now, what has Shapiro and Atkins brought in? Upton? Who else has he brought in that's made an impact on this team?
App, Estrada, Grilly.
Well, they didn't bring Estrada in. They re-signed Estrada.
Come on.
He wasn't
Estrada
already
was
here.
Already
he was a free
here.
Agent.
No, but here's the point. What you're talking about Alex's trades. How many of his trades worked out?
Lots of them. Most
lots
of them.
Alex's trades.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Going back a couple of years ago, there were people ready to fire Alex a couple of years ago.
No. Jeff, come on. They were ready to fire Alex because they didn't understand what they were getting. But now that we know.
No, they were ready to fire Alex because the team wasn't winning, dude. Come on.
Yeah, but
give your head a shake. They were ready to fire the general manager because the team wasn't winning. Come on.
The team was winning, so they couldn't fire him. So who was right? Was it Alex was right or the people that wanted to fire him right? Obviously, Alex was right. So we have to respect what he did. And we have to stop, trying to, sugarcoat what Atkins and Shapiro are. And what is it? They don't have the greatness of finding that player.
All right.
Come on.
We're going to move on to another call. I don't know how you identify greatness in general managers.
Yeah, and I think you're really giving short shrift to the things that Shapiro and Atkins did last year to augment a team that was already very good, that was put together by Alex Anthopoulos. It's not an us versus them. It's not a this guy's great, these other guys are terrible. Mark Shapiro's a pretty smart guy. He's had a lot of success in this game. Alex Anthopoulos, also a pretty smart guy. But he's a Los Angeles Dodger now. And I think, you got to move on and understand that this team is in the hands of people who also know what they're doing.
Yeah, and my whole point, look, I love Alex more than most people. I've known him longer than just about anybody that's around the Blue Jays. And I have no problem with Alex as a general manager. But this idea that everything he did turned to gold, and this idea that, if Alex was here, Edwin was going to sign, I can guarantee you Alex is not giving Edwin more than 4-20. He's just not, because that comes from ownership. That's not just a matter of the general manager. Ownership hasn't changed. And I'll go further to the point, and I've said this, and I know it's not necessarily a popular feeling, but I would take Shapiro and Atkins as a combination over Alex and Beeston as a combination. I'm not entirely certain Paul Beeston was the right guy to be the go-between with this ownership. I think Mark Shapiro is. And I know nobody wants to say that, but I'm just saying that I think if you're going to go down that road, and that's no disrespect to Paul Beeston, but I just think these guys have a better handle on what ownership wants. But this idea that if Alex was here, Edwin was going to be would be re-signed. Sorry, I don't see it.
It's the easy crutch to fall on, and I love Alex as well, and I think that actually I do think that most of the stuff he did turned to gold, and he made very few missteps along the way. But look, It's the easiest thing in the world is to say, well, if Alex was here, then this would be different. And if Alex was here, then Bautista would have signed last spring. And if Alex was here, and that's something too, right? If you believe that if Alex was here, Edwin Encarnacion was getting this multi-year deal and staying, then you should also be believing that if Alex was here, Bautista gets his 5 and 150
yep.
last spring. And how thrilled are we going to be with that? But I'll say to your point, Shapiro is an ownership hire. He is their guy, and you're right. He is probably a better go-between ownership in the team than Paul Beeston was becoming at the end. But it would have been really interesting to see what Shapiro and Alex could have done together.
Jamie Campbell is part of our cast of bazillions at the winter meetings in National Harbor, Maryland. Jamie Campbell will join us when the Jeff Blair Show with Michael Wilner continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.